All right, so as you guessed it, today we're going to be talking about Hanukkah. Hanukkah is an interesting thing to be talking about at this time of year, since it is the period for Hanukkah. Angie and I got involved with Hanukkah back, in 2001. 2001 was an interesting year for us. It's the we had been hosting the Feast of Tabernacles for a couple of years, and then in 2001 we were not able to get the facility that we had used for the previous 2 years, so we ended up going someplace else to keep the feast that year. And then we came home, and then shortly after that it was Thanksgiving. And so Angie and I were on our way to Thanksgiving, and on our way there we came up with a bright idea that we would, since we didn't get to host the feast, we would just host a Hanukkah celebration. Now, at the time, we didn't know that much about Hanukkah, but we knew some people who did, and so we took and contacted them and asked them if they would take and be speakers at the Hanukkah celebration, which the fellow was glad to do and really wanted to do so. But nevertheless, Hanukkah was still somewhat out of the box for us, and we did not really know that much about it. And not only did we not know much about it, we didn't know if we should do Hanukkah. So when we got back from Thanksgiving that year, I got out the books and started studying into it real deeply, and I came to the conclusion that yes, Hanukkah is something that would be of value to us. And so we went ahead and went forward with our plans for Hanukkah, and it turned out really well in that regards. Now, there is an interesting story, though. As we were preparing for Hanukkah, we were down at Lowe's, and down at Sam's Wholesale, and we were buying a whole bunch of plates and food and cups and stuff like that, just typical stuff you would have for a party. And as we were there at the checkout stand, we had this big old cart full of stuff, and as we were at the checkout stand, one of my former pastors walked by. And he looked over there at our cart, and at that time we were no longer a part of what he was doing. But he was familiar enough with us to know that we were no longer part of the church, but he also knew that we knew that he was still a part of the church, okay? And so he walked by, and he looked at what we had there, and he says, "Looks like you guys are planning for a pretty big party." And I just said, "No, we're just planning for a Hanukkah celebration." And then he came back and said, "Well, I keep God's festivals instead of the Jewish festivals." And so it got me to thinking, what was this deal? Why was this instead? You know, why did he say instead of the Jewish festivals? I mean, you really think about it. For years, we had been told that we were keeping Jewish festivals, because that's basically what we, you know, that's what everybody thought. And so what was it about Hanukkah that caused it to be an instead thing instead of, "Oh, well, that's interesting," or something like that? Well, I knew that he already kept the festivals, and he knew that I was still keeping the festivals. So he knew that it wasn't that we had gone weird or anything like that. But anyway, he said what he said, but it caused me to really want to dig even deeper into the festival of Hanukkah and see what it's all about. And basically I was trying to decide on this question, or come to an answer to this question. That is, can God's people, those people who are truly striving to walk in the ways of Messiah and walk in the ways of God, can they keep the Jewish festivals or observe the Jewish festivals as well as God's festivals and be pleasing to God? Can we do both and be pleasing to God? So in this study, what I want to do is I want to answer these questions. Can God's people actually observe this Jewish festival specifically and still be pleasing to God? Does it have to be one or the other, or can it be both? And so we're going to take and look at three different questions. Why would we want to observe Hanukkah? I mean, just not assuming that we're going to, just assuming that we're trying to look into it. Why would we want to observe Hanukkah? That's the first question. Second question, is Hanukkah rooted in idolatry? Which is a very good question, I believe, because there's a number of people out there who believe this. And do we have any biblical examples of God's people observing Hanukkah? But before we get started into that, I want to go through just a real brief discussion of what Hanukkah is for those who may not be sure, may not know about it. Hanukkah is an eight-day festival. It's called the Feast of Dedication. Hanukkah means dedication. It's called the Feast of Dedication because it was during this festival, or at the beginning of this festival, that the Jewish people took and rededicated the altar at the temple in Jerusalem after it had been desecrated with pig's blood exactly three years prior to this. And this all happened right around 165 B.C., before the birth of Messiah. So the reason for the desecration of the altar, which was done by a fellow named Antiochus Epiphanes, is that he was trying to change the culture of the Jewish people. He was wanting to change that whole area from being of a Greek culture, or being from a Hebrew culture, to that of a Greek culture. Now, there's a reason for that. The Greek culture is a culture of thinking. It's a culture of Aristotle and Socrates and Philo and these Plato, these guys who were great thinkers, but they thought Greek, and they often incorporated paganisms, all types of paganisms, into their way of thinking. Whereas the Hebrew culture was a culture of let's do something. It's an action-based culture, action-based way of life, and so it's not necessarily what you think about this, what you think about that. It's what you do, which was important to the Jewish people. And so that was not satisfying to Antiochus, and so he wanted to change all that. And so what he did is he first off started by to make certain things illegal for the Jews to do. He made it illegal for them to study Torah. He made it illegal for them to circumcise their children. He made it illegal for them to keep the new moon celebrations, because by making the new moon illegal, then they would get off on their festivals. That was what he was hoping to do. But they did this all for the purpose so that, as according to 1 Maccabees 1:49, so they would forget the law and change ordinances. It was Antiochus's desire for the Jewish people to completely forget about the law of God and change their entire culture to this Greek way of thinking. So the story of Hanukkah is a story of religious freedom. It's not necessarily a story of overthrowing the Greeks or anything. It was a story of religious freedom, but more importantly, the preservation of the Hebrew culture in the midst of a pagan world. It's about preserving this culture that we are trying to live ourselves. Because of the significance of the events of that day, the Jewish leaders of the day proclaimed that these days should be observed by the Jews in Judea from that day forward. And so there is this proclamation made. It's by Judah Maccabee, who said, "Then Judas and his brothers and all the assembly of Israel determined that every year at that season the days of dedication of the altar should be observed with joy and gladness for 8 days, beginning with the 25th day of the month of Kislev." Okay? So, and I'm quoting here from the New Revised Standard Version. Other versions say it differently. We'll say it differently. Of course, this is out of the book of Maccabees, so you're not going to find it in very many Bibles. Okay, but that's the way it was in the New Revised Standard Version, who does contain the book of Maccabees. So why then, to answer our first question, would the non-Jews want to observe Hanukkah? There's a number of reasons, and so I want to go through those reasons. That's our first bullet point. We'll go through four reasons why I believe it would be important to observe Hanukkah. And the first reason was the restoration of the Hebrew walk. We're right now in the midst of a restoration. And just talking for us ourselves today, what we're doing is we're in the midst of turning away from basically 2,000 years of Greek culture. We're beginning to take and grab hold of things more Hebraic. We're starting to think circular instead of linear. And we're getting our mindset on the fact that if God says to do it, we're just going to do it. We're not necessarily going to ask questions. We're just going to do it. Now, we'll study into these things, but the point is we're going to do it first without reasoning. We're not going to have to sit down for a month and try to figure out what God's saying before we're going to decide if we're going to do what he says for us to do. We're just going to do it. And this is the Hebrew culture that we're trying to grab hold of. But as more and more people do that, then Hasatan has a problem. Because as we begin to walk more like God, then Hasatan has got to get rid of us because we're thwarting his plan. So he's got to try to get rid of us. So he's going to begin to attack. And just as he did to the Jews, he attacks by limiting what you can do. And I mean, we're seeing that today in our society. We're seeing where walking in the ways of God may not necessarily be illegal, but they're so close to it right now that you can taste it. I mean, you can look, you know, this whole healthcare thing, it's forcing people to do things that they don't want, that they would not normally, that they don't want to do, that they think is morally wrong to do. This is what was happening in the days of Antiochus, and it's happening to us today. So when we look at Hanukkah and we study what happened and we act out what happened during those days, then we can glean encouragement from the story because we know how their story ended up. We know that they were faced with the same types of things that we're faced with today. And by studying the story of Hanukkah, then we can see that if we, you know, if we just go forward and we trust in Yahweh, that these things are going to work out. And in the process, we're going to drive the Syrian out of our lives. And that Syrian being Hasatan in this case. We'll drive him out, and eventually we know, because we've also read the end of the book, that the culture is going to be preserved. The Hebrew culture is going to be preserved. So this is one reason why I think it's important. Another thing is the preservation of the Jewish culture. Now, the preservation of the Jewish culture is very important because Yeshua had to be born into a Jewish culture. If the Maccabees had not stepped forward and did what they did, then the Jewish culture basically would have gone away. And according to this one fellow, Richard Spurlock, says the battle over God's word would not have occurred if it had not been for the Maccabees. Instead, God's people would have quietly disappeared into the melee of Hellenism. And so they would have basically ceased to be a people, just like the northern tribes ceased to be a people. But God couldn't let that happen because Yeshua had to come, and he had to come into a Jewish society. He had to come into a people that believed that in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for one. That he had to come into a culture that respected the Torah. He had to come into a culture that where the people were educated in the biblical prophecies so that they would know that he was indeed Messiah. And he also needed to come into a culture that already had an infrastructure of synagogues set up, like the Jewish people did, to where this message could go out throughout the world. And this could only have happened if the Jewish people had been a viable people in that day. So without Hanukkah, this would never have happened. The Messiah could not have come because he needed that. You know, and what's more, Yeshua needed the Pharisees. Not just to have someone to spar against, but the Pharisees, when you really sit down and think about it, the Pharisees are the ones who actually did promote this word throughout the world. Most of Yeshua's disciples, if you look at what they believed, look at how they taught what they taught in the various epistles, they were all Pharisees. Paul is a Pharisee of the Pharisees. So it was important that this whole system be established in that day and age for for Yeshua to come on the scene. So here's the second reason why I think it's important that we observe Hanukkah, because it helps us understand the significance of what God was doing and how he worked things around to prepare these people for this for the coming of the Messiah. Now, a third reason that it's important is for insight into prophecy.
Now, the Hanukkah story is widely understood to be a fulfillment of the Daniel 11 and 12 prophecy, that of the abomination that makes desolate. Now, Yeshua had a similar prophecy in Matthew 24, where he talked about the abomination that makes desolate also, and he gave warnings as to what the people in his day and age should do. Now, he did not have to explain the abomination that makes desolate to the Jewish people. They knew what he was talking about. And why did they know what he was talking about? Number one, Daniel had talked about it. Daniel had prophesied about it. But their history contained the actual or an actual fulfillment of that prophecy in the Hanukkah story. So their observance of Hanukkah for these past 200 years had prepared them for Yeshua to be able to use that as an example. And thankfully for us, many of the Jewish people heeded the warning that Yeshua said, because Yeshua said, when you see the armies surrounding Jerusalem, just as they did back in the time of the Maccabees, when you see them surrounding Jerusalem, you flee to the mountains. And according to tradition, that when they did see that, the believers actually did flee to the mountains. And many Jews died in the destruction of the temple, but those believers had fled, and then they were able to get out of the city. They were able to take and go out and spread this message all through the world. So this Hanukkah story gives us this insight into this biblical prophecy, and a prophecy that, by the way, is not yet fulfilled. It's an end time prophecy. The Daniel 11 prophecy has not seen its complete fulfillment, and the greater fulfillment is going to be in the end time. And we can learn about this by studying the events surrounding Hanukkah. All right, and then a third or fourth reason is to provoke Judah to jealousy. Now, in Romans 11, Paul made this statement. And of course, in Romans, Paul is talking to a congregation of people in Rome who are made up of both Jews and non-Jewish Israelites, Jews and non-Jewish Israelites. And there's a problem there because they can't seem to get along. The Jews don't understand what's going on. The non-Jews do understand what's going on, but they don't know how they're going to fit in. So Paul makes this statement. He says in Romans 11, verse 11, I say then, have they stumbled, that being the Jews, that they should fall? Certainly not. But through their fall, to provoke them to jealousy, salvation has come to the Gentiles. So what Paul is saying is that for the non-Jews, the non-Jewish believers, we have a role. And our role is to provoke Judah to jealousy. Now, the Jews have been a group of people who pretty much have set off to the side for a number of years. They sort of tried to be not out there, you know, they're not out there making waves and stuff like that. They've tried to hide because they know that they're a persecuted people, and so they've hid themselves away pretty much. But as time goes on, they've become, you know, they've become more and more visible in all of this. But nevertheless, the Jews are a people who have been very non-willing to actually mix with anybody. They're not wanting to mix their culture with anyone, and that's one of the reasons why it's so hard for Christians to go in there and proselyze Jews. Not that we want to go out there and proselyze Jews, but for those who do, you just can't make much headway because the Jews are just basically not wanting to deal with you. They don't want to be a part of what you're doing. But we can. And one of the ways we can is by not putting down what they do. Not trying to criticize their traditions, criticize their walk. You know, when we're keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, that in itself, even though this is not a Jewish tradition, but when we keep the Feast of Tabernacles or Passover or any of these Leviticus 23 festivals, we, in essence, are making Judah jealous because they don't understand these non-Jews out there doing these things. They don't understand it at all. But when they do see us doing it, they often notice that we're probably doing it better than they're doing it. Because for the most part, Judah has let a lot of this fall by the wayside. They're not getting real involved in this walk unless you're in the Orthodox circles. Normative Judaism is not really that involved in the festivals of God and doing the walk. And so they see non-Jews doing it, and they just get jealous. They don't like it, that we're doing something that they should be doing. And it's typical. You know, we would do the same thing if we knew we were supposed to be doing something and someone else did it instead and they did it better than we did. So our role in many ways is for us to be better Jews than the Jews. And so through observing Hanukkah, that gives us sort of an inroad. When they see us out there doing Hanukkah or observing Hanukkah, they'll wonder why we're observing Hanukkah. And if, when they come and ask, we can simply tell them, well, you know, it's a good Jewish holiday, and I see nothing wrong with it, and it appears that Messiah Yeshua did. So get them talking about it. So anyway, this is just another reason why we should, or why we could, if we wanted to, keep Hanukkah. Now, are there any reasons why we should not keep Hanukkah? Are there any reasons why we should not? Well, of course there are. Number one, it's not commanded in the Scripture. We see it nowhere in the Bible for us to observe Hanukkah. But we also don't see anywhere in the Bible for us to observe the 4th of July. So we could take and, you know, just because it's not in there doesn't mean you can't do it. But it's one of the reasons why a lot of people don't. They say, well, it's not in Leviticus 23. And that's what my pastor was saying, indicating basically. It's not in Leviticus 23, so why would I want to do it? Okay? One of the other reasons is that people believe that Hanukkah is rooted in paganism. Now, a long time ago, back in 1995, long time for me, back in 1995, there was a fellow over at our house, and we were standing at the kitchen sink, and I still remember exactly what was going on. And this was a fellow who was had been a part of our church, and he was walking away from the lifestyle that we had lived for years. And he was just leaving it behind. And so, you know, I thought, well, I can convince him to come back to this walk. And so I got into a discussion with him, and I said, well, you know, the Scripture says, let me see if I put it up here. We were talking along, and I said, well, you know, the Scripture says there in Deuteronomy 12, 29, 31, that you are not to take and observe the customs of the pagans in the land. When, you know, that their idolatrous practices, you're not even to use their idolatrous practices in the way that you try to worship me, that you worship me. And so I was going along with that, and I was trying to explain that to him, and so he just came back, and his response to that was simply this: the pagans pray to their God, so we can't pray. And I was taken back, okay? Because, you know, what I was trying to tell him was that if the pagans do it, we can't do it. But the pagans pray. The pagans offered sacrifices, so does it mean we can't offer sacrifices? The pagans tie their shoes, does that mean we can't tie our shoes? You know, so just because the pagans do it doesn't make it necessarily wrong. It's how they use it, right? It's how they use what they're doing. And so it got me to thinking there more. And so I started looking at these things that, you know, we sometimes think that everything's pagan out there. If you read the book Too Long Under the Sun, there's a whole book full of pagan practices. Or if you read the book Babylon Mystery Religion, you know, they just listed off all these pagan practices. But are the things that we look at as pagan because they were created to be pagan, or were they pagan because the paganism was added to a perfectly legitimate practice? Okay, and I'm not wanting to necessarily answer that question, but it's something that we need to look at. All right, so one of the things that I was told is that there are pagan origins to the practice of Hanukkah. And so I was back in 1997, Angie and I and a couple of other people put together a meeting up in Wagner, Oklahoma, and we invited a whole bunch of people to it, and it was called In the Footsteps of Messiah. And so we were up there, in Wagner, and we were going along with our merry way, and I was new to all this stuff pretty much. But it just so happened, I didn't know about this until we were already there, but we had scheduled this thing over the Christmas break because there was 3 days there, and we were going to have a three-day seminar. And it just so happened that it coincided with Hanukkah. And so there were people there who wanted to do Hanukkah-type celebrations while we were there, and we didn't care what they did. You know, we didn't get ourselves involved in it because we didn't know anything about Hanukkah necessarily. And so we were there, and then one of the fellows came up to me, and he says, "Well, you know Hanukkah's pagan, don't you?" And I said, "No, I don't. I don't really know that much about what Hanukkah is anyway." So anyway, when we got home, he emailed me this thing about Hanukkah. And what he was saying is that the word Hanukkah itself is derived from the name of a pagan god. So this is what he sent me, a part of what he sent me. He says the word Kunka, or Hanukkah, or Hunukkah, okay, comes from Hun, who was a false god in Israel and in Babylon. And 1 Chronicles 18:8 tells us that this city named Hun was in Samaria, and that it was a brass-making center. And it was, because this is where Solomon went and got the brass to make the golden laver, or the brazen laver. And the root of this word, kun, is the false god for whom that city was named, which is Strong's number 3594. And this idol simply was also known as Baal Peor. Okay, so I went to Strong's 3594, and I couldn't find anything about it being the name of a false god. And I went to my lexicon, Jesenius lexicon, and I couldn't find it either. And so I don't believe that he was correct in his statement there. But to prove that he was not correct in his statement, I want us to take a moment and look at the word Hanukkah and where it came from. The word Hanukkah is the Hebrew word Hanukkah. And it's spelled like that, het, noon, kaf, and a hey. And it's Strong's 2598, and it actually means dedication. You can look in your Strong's, and this is exactly what it means. And the word dedication, or Hanukkah, comes from the Hebrew word hanak. And hanak is het, noon, and a final kaf. And it means to dedicate and train up. In other words, Hanukkah is a perfectly good Hebrew word. It's not derived from any pagan source. It's a perfectly good Hebrew word. And it means to dedicate and to train up. Now, it's an interesting word there because it's only used, the root word Hanukkah is only used 5 times in the scripture. 4 times it's used in relation to dedicating something. 1 time it's used in train up. Guess where it might be used? It's used right here. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. This is the same word from which we get the word Hanukkah. Now, it's interesting, this is a little sidebar. It's interesting about this word Hanuk. The etymology of Hanuk is to take and put dates in your mouth, chew them up, take them out, and touch them to the palate of a baby, a newborn baby. That's what the etymology of it is. And the idea is that you put on the palate of the newborn baby this taste of these chewed up dates, and that's going to entice the baby then to want more of that. Thus, he'll grab hold of the mother's breast and feed. This is the whole idea behind this whole hoon word. And so when you look at that and you use it in that regards of training up your children, it basically tells us that we are to make Torah, make the way of God, the derech of God, make it palatable and desirable for the child. We are to make it desirable for the child. We're not to spank the children into it. We're to make it desirable. We're supposed to help them to see the advantages of it. And it's sort of like what would happen with the prodigal son. You know, the prodigal son walks off or leaves, but then he wants to come back to the home. And why does he want to come back to the home? because it was better for him at home than it was where he had gone to. And that's the whole concept there behind raising up or training up a child in the way that he would go. He's always going to want to come back. He's going to want more of the way. And generally people decide they want more of the way when they're away from the way and when they see that it's not, they're not in a good situation. So anyway, nevertheless, the term Hanukkah is a perfectly good Hebrew word, and it is not rooted in any type of pagan culture or the name of a pagan god. All right, so let's look at some other things that would keep us from not wanting to observe Hanukkah, and the next of those is pagan customs in Hanukkah. Now, there's all kinds of games and stuff that are associated with Hanukkah. The dreidel game, it's not hard to figure out what dreidels were all about. It was more about tricking the Syrians into not thinking you're actually studying your Torah. And then there's the gelt, the money, and the little games they played, all trying to trick the Syrians. And even the eight-branch menorah, many people think it's pagan because it's not a seven-branch menorah. But according to tradition, the reason it's an eight-branch menorah is because, or a nine-branch menorah, is because there's 8 days of Hanukkah, and there's a candle in the middle to light the candles up. But specifically, from what I understand, is that when custom got started, that they did not want a seven-branch menorah because they didn't want to duplicate something that was used for sacred purposes, which is the seventh-branch menorah. So, those are some of the things that are considered. Now, there are other things that other people may consider pagan about it. I didn't bring in everything in regards to this. But I want us to think about something when we start to paganize every last little thing in this. And that is this. Our Messiah was born 2,000 years ago. And when he was born, or shortly thereafter, people came to honor from far off. They came to honor his birth and to bring gifts. Is that correct? Okay. Roughly 250 years later, this idea of honoring the king, honoring Messiah, was mixed with the ancient practice of worshiping the sun or Saturnalia. Okay, so you had this mixture. All right, so because the birth of Messiah and coming to honor the king was mixed with Saturnalia, does that mean that those people back who came to honor the king were practicing paganism? No. They were coming to worship the king. But because people added something to it, now it is appearing to be pagan when you honor the king on his birthday, on his birth, if it indeed is his birth. But we know that it's not. It's not wrong to honor the king. We honor the king all the time. So simply because someone has mixed some paganism with it does not make the original concept pagan. Now, we honor the king, and we're probably honoring his birth when we keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Because, you know, basically you can prove that the Messiah was born sometime during the fall holy days. So we're probably doing things that other people might even look as pagan because we are honoring his birth in many ways by keeping the feast. So anyway, we just want to think about that when we're trying to determine if we should or shouldn't do something. What is the root of what we're actually doing? And so far, I've not seen in Hanukkah that it has any of these pagan things that have got it started. Now, we've got to face this fact that we live in a culture where Hasatan is trying to make everything look pagan. I mean, there's not much you can get out there and do that someone can't say there's a pagan or route to it. I got on the website. Actually, I did this about a year ago, and I was looking up things about the Feast of Tabernacles and ran across this website that had all of the pagan roots of the Feast of Tabernacles. And you will. You'll find paganism in anything if you look hard enough, because someone's going to try to show you that there's something pagan in practically everything. Hasatan has tried to introduce paganism into anything and wants us to make sure that everything is pagan in some way. Now, another way to look at some of these things when we start to determine if, or want to determine if something should or should not be observed, is think about the example of Yeshua himself. Now, Yeshua said that he was born into a wicked and adulterous generation. And we understand that spiritual adultery is idolatry, right? And so Messiah, God put Messiah in this earth, on this earth, in the midst of a very wicked and idolatrous time. But he did it for a purpose. He had to live within this society, that particular society of the day, because he had a job for him to do. There was Hellenism all through that country. And there was Hellenist gods, there was Roman gods, there was all through that area at that time. But did you realize that Yeshua made a very profound proclamation at probably the most idolatrous place on the face of the earth at that time? Well, he did. Let me see. He said this in Matthew 16. He says, talking to Peter, he says, "And also I say to you, Peter, that you, Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell," or gates of Hades, "shall not prevail against it." Remember him saying that? Okay, so he's talking about Peter and what Peter was going to be instrumental in doing in actually rebuilding the Kahal of Israel, the way I see that. But Yeshua did this at a very pagan place. And the place he did this was a place called Caesarea Philippi. Now, Caesarea Philippi is a city that's named after Augustus Caesar. And King Herod's son, Philip. And, you know, there is a Caesarea on the coast of Israel. But Caesarea Philippi is at the base of Mount Hermon. How many of you have been to Caesarea Philippi? I know you have. Okay, so I can say anything I want to. No one's going to know any different. Okay, well, I've been there. I've been to Caesarea Philippi. And Caesarea Philippi, besides going by that name, it goes by the moniker, the Gates of Hell. And the reason it's called that is because, you see that cave right there? That cave used to have a big gush of water coming out of it. Apparently a very big gush of water. It was a spring that came out, and it was one of the three tributaries that fed the Sea of Galilee. A large volume of water came out of there. And because of the large volume of water, and because they didn't know, they never could go down into the cave because of the water, they thought that the cave went to hell. And thus, it was the gates of hell. And because of that, they took and used this to preserve, and or not preserve, but to take and worship their gods. You see this right here? Well, that's just a little area that was cut out in the rock for them to put a god, a goddess or a god or something like that. And there's hundreds of them there. Hundreds of them. Well, this was considered the most pagan place on earth. And the water that came out of this fed the Sea of Galilee. And what does the Sea of Galilee feed? The Jordan River. And where is Yeshua baptized? In the Jordan River. So he was baptized in water that came from the gates of hell. Okay, I like telling people that I've been to hell and back. I've been to the gates of hell and back. And I've also been to the lake of fire. Because the Dead Sea is called the lake of fire because it burns. It used to burn all the time because there is oil deposits coming up. In fact, if you go to the lake, to the Dead Sea nowadays, and you go swimming in it, when you come out, you're going to be all oily, and you're going to see tar along the edges of it because it used to burn all the time. And so, but these are the places that Yeshua used to give some of his most awesome teachings, the gates of hell, a very pagan place on earth. In fact, this place was used for child sacrifice. There's a cliff up there on the top. You go up about 100 feet and there's a cliff. And they would throw their children off of this as child sacrifices. They had temples built there to all the different queens and kings and goddesses and all that stuff of the Greek and Roman cultures. And at that time Yeshua's here, there was a temple to Diana. And there's a temple to Pan. All right? All these Greek gods. So when we think about having to separate ourselves, so, you know, be so infinite in separating ourselves from paganism, we need to realize that Yeshua didn't. He used these things sometimes to his advantage. So with that, were there pagan customs that were added to Hanukkah? Well, there is. Very definitely. Even though you can't necessarily find paganism in dreidels and gelt and those types of things, which I don't think you can find anything pagan in that. But you are going to find paganism in a Hanukkah bush. Okay? And this is an icon of a little, what they call a Hanukkah bush. And there's other things that modern Judaism has added to Hanukkah in order to make it look more like Christmas. It's just a fact of life. I know there's a lot of people who are Jewish who don't want to admit it. In fact, it permeates Reform Judaism, and many people in conservative Judaism participate in this. You have to get up into basically the Orthodox circles to where you get away from this Hanukkah bush thing. But because they've added the Hanukkah bush to Hanukkah, does that make Hanukkah bad? That's something we have to decide. Okay? But they have added this to this, and they've added other things as well. Gift giving, they've added to that. But I can tell you what, I used to go to the Feast of Tabernacles, and people would buy gifts for their children, and they would give gifts to their children, and then they would say, well, this is our Christmas. Okay, so does that make Feast of Tabernacles bad? Because some people, during the Feast of Tabernacles, would give gifts to their children and then say, this is our Christmas. Okay, but it happens. Bottom line is, there's in anything, there's going to be a group of people who are going to make it bad. Or they're going to taint it for everybody else. So yes, there were indeed pagan customs added. And then there's another thing. Some believe that Judah Maccabee patterned Hanukkah after a pagan festival. There again, many believe it was Saturnalia. But Saturnalia always falls on a certain day of the year. Not a date, but it's a traceable time. But Judah Maccabee didn't choose a certain date. He chose to do this on the date that they took and actually started offering sacrifices at the temple. So I don't think that you're going to be able to tie this to any pagan festival. So is Hanukkah rooted in paganism? This doesn't appear to be the case to me. Even though others have brought paganism into it, it does not appear to me to have been rooted in paganism. Now, were there ever any biblical characters who kept Hanukkah? Well, I want us to consider this. We have the story of Hanukkah does not appear in most Christian Bibles. And if you've got a Catholic Bible, it's going to be in there. And it's not going to be in very many Jewish, like JPS, Jewish Publication Society, or Stone Tanakh, or anything like that. They're not going to include the Maccabees, the story of Hanukkah, in that. But it is in the Septuagint. Okay? And the Septuagint was written just about the same time that these things were happening, because Septuagint was done in Egypt, in Alexandria, Egypt, at about the same time that the Maccabees were fighting the Syrians up in Judea. But for whatever reason, the Jews did not want to include the story of Hanukkah in any of their other books. And the Bible, according to tradition, was canonized, or at least the Tanakh portion, the Old Testament portion of the Bible, was canonized about 100 A.D. at the Council of Yavne, which was a meeting of the Sanhedrin. And at that time, they formally canonized the Bible, or at least the Old Testament portion of the Bible. And for whatever reason, they did not want to include the story of the Maccabees. Well, they also didn't want to include the story of Daniel. And they also didn't want to include the story of Esther in the original canon. But apparently, wiser minds won out. And they did include Daniel and they did include Esther in the canon. But they didn't include the book of Maccabees. And the common theory that's thrown out there as to why they didn't is because the book of the Maccabees basically makes the Hasmoneans look good. Now, the Hasmoneans are the family of Judah Maccabee. Judah Maccabee's real name was Judah Hasmonae. And so, because the Maccabees looked good in this, they didn't like that because as time went on, the king who ruled Judea in the first century was a descendant of the Hasmoneans. King Herod was half Edomite, half Hasmonean. And so they didn't like that. But they should have liked that because it was as a result of the Hanukkah story that brought about the birth of the sect of the Pharisees. Because even though Judah Maccabee fought the Syrians, his younger brother, who eventually ruled Judea after Judah died, actually adopted all the things they fought to get rid of. He adopted the entire Syrian culture himself and brought it into Jewish Israel. And because of that, you had a group of people who called themselves separatists who did not want to be a part of this Greek culture that Simon Maccabee actually ended up bringing into the culture. And these separatists were known in Hebrew as Parshim, and we see that today as Pharisees. So the Pharisees were the ones who took and fighting against the Greek culture. And so you would think that the rabbis would have been proud of that because the rabbis were pretty much all Pharisees. But nevertheless, they did not like that. So the Septuagint was not the Book of Maccabees was not included then in the normal canon that we now call the Masoretic text. All right. But there again, it is included in the Septuagint. If those books, if the Book of Maccabees had been included in the canon, just like Esther and the book of Daniel were included, then all the Maccabees would be biblical characters, wouldn't they? All right, so for this Yavne experience back then, that is why we cannot call them biblical characters, and we can't technically call the book of Maccabees a biblical story, or the whole Hanukkah story. We can't call it a biblical story because of the council there at Yavne. Nevertheless, we do have a biblical character that I believe kept Hanukkah, and that was Yeshua. And we know the story. Yeshua was at Solomon's Gate. Now, it was the Feast of Dedication in Jerusalem, and it was winter. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch, and then the Jews surrounded him and said to him, "How long do you keep us in doubt? If you are Christ, tell us plainly." All right, so here he was. He was walking through Solomon's court in the dead of the winter. And John specifically calls it during the Feast of Dedication, which we know to be Hanukkah. So there's the question. Why was Yeshua there? Now, there are some who believe that he was there because he did not like the whole Hanukkah thing going on, and so he was up there to oppose it. But there's nothing in Scripture that says that he was there to oppose it. It says he was there. And then there's others who say, well, he was in Solomon's court. He was not at the temple. So therefore, he was not part of the observance. Well, the thing is, Hanukkah is not a temple observance. There's nothing in the whole Hanukkah story that says it has to be done or should be done at the temple. It's not a temple observance at all. So for Yeshua, I mean, didn't even have to be on the Temple Mount in regards to observing Hanukkah at that time. But we do have this recorded that he was there. But we do have some indication, though, that the Pharisees who confronted him were thinking about Hanukkah at the time, because they ask him this question. They say, "How long do you keep us in doubt? If you are the Christ, tell us plainly." All right. What was the role of the Christ? What was the role that they thought the Christ, the Messiah, the Mashiach, was going to do for Israel?
Restore the kingdom.
And as part of restoring the kingdom, what was he going to do? He was going to drive out the Romans. So they were looking for a hero. They were looking for a Judah Maccabee. Because this was probably what was on their mind at this time. The whole theme of the story is getting rid of the oppressive people. They were being oppressed by the Romans. And so they ask him, "Are you our champion? Are you the one who's going to drive them out? Are you our our Judah Maccabee?" And Yeshua, of course, was not going to be at that time. And so he said something that got them riled about him being the Son of God. And they were getting ready to stone him. And so he just sort of slipped out, went down to that pagan Jordan River. And spent his time there and headed on up to Galilee. So was Yeshua there? I mean, it's 110 miles from Jerusalem to Capernaum. 110 miles. I'm like Jonathan. Sometimes I like to get my Google Maps out and find out this stuff. But that's a long way to walk, right? And for him to come all the way down to Judea for something, I mean, he's not down in Judea most of the time. He lives in Capernaum, 110 miles away. Now, there's a theory that he was there for the Feast of Tabernacles and he just stayed around. I mean, we're just, 6 weeks out of the feast ourselves right now? And that's a possibility. But the point is that John made it a point to say that he was there during the Feast of Hanukkah. All right. And so that's one important biblical character who was there. So to finish this up, why do I observe Hanukkah? I believe there are some very compelling reasons to observe Hanukkah. It helps to reinforce our walk, especially as more people are drawn back into this way of life. This is a story that can give us encouragement. It commemorates people who are willing to stand up against great odds to preserve the Hebrew way of life. It provides insight into prophecy. It provides an avenue whereby we can fulfill our role to make Judah jealous for Yahweh. It's not based in a previous pagan practice, that is, as long as we don't bring paganism into it. And Yeshua did it. So just a few weeks ago, we all enjoyed observing the Feast of Tabernacles. And a very good case can be made that Messiah Yeshua was born during the fall festival, and possibly on the first day of Sukkot. If that's the case, and if we were to count back 40 weeks from the first day of Sukkot, it's quite possible that the light of the world was conceived during the Festival of Lights. So, Hanukkah is a good Jewish festival. It's just, for us, it's just like the 4th of July. It's a festival about bringing freedom to a small group of people who are fighting against much greater odds. And I believe that God looks down on us and is pleased when we celebrate these days. And as we do, I hope that we learn to appreciate the sacrifices our forefathers made to preserve our freedom and our Hebrew way of life. And with that, I say, Shalom Aleichem.